John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy will be back on Monday. Of course, Friday mornings at 8 are reserved for the Week in Review. We take a look back at the week's top stories from a couple of different political perspectives. Joining me on the program today, Owen Robinson, columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, John.
And Ed Filone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Well, let's start right off with the governor signing a whole bunch of bills this week, including one that changes the rules for in-person absentee voting, ends weekend voting, and limits absentee voting to no later than 7 p.m. During the week. Owen Robinson, let's start with you on that one. Now, what problem were we solving here?
I think we were solving a problem of just having uniform access to the polls throughout all communities. I mean, I live in West Bend. It's a smaller community. We have four or five clerks that do great work, but they can't work, you know, every weekend for weeks in advance and evenings and all of that. So in West Bend, we don't do that because we don't have the staff to do it. So we don't have as much access to the polls as they were able to do in larger cities like Milwaukee or Madison. But I think, you know, you still look at it and there's, what, 55 hours a week for 2 weeks in advance, 110 hours, plus you can still vote by mail, plus you can still go on election day. And for some way, we managed to have elections only on election day for nearly 100 you know, or over 100 years before we started early voting and seemed to be able to elect liberals and even socialists as mayors of Milwaukee. And somehow we all had access and were able to work just fine then. I don't understand the big push to have these, you know, very open laws that or very open laws for voting access that really open up the doors for fraud.
Ed Filone?
Well, I'm very disappointed to hear people talk about questions of uniformity as if that's the goal of voting laws. The goal of voting laws is access to vote for people. I mean, this is a democracy. We exercise our sovereign power as a people through the vote, and the goal should always be to make sure more people vote because we are the sovereign. Look, a municipality, a county that has one polling place and 1,000 residents is going to have some lines at the voting booth. You've got one polling place and 100,000 residents, you're going to have long lines. And it's just that simple, and that's why extended hours reduces the lines in urban areas. And when you take away extended hours, you have long lines, and that decreases the opportunities for people to vote who can't get away from their job during 9 to 5. It causes frustration. People don't want to wait an hour in line to vote. You don't have those problems in West Bend. You don't have those problems in Elroy, Turtle Lake. You have those problems in Madison and Milwaukee because that's where the people are. It's that simple. And to try and cast this as something about uniformity, I think, is just cynical.
Walker also vetoed a portion of the bill that would have reimbursed local governments for costs associated with early voting. And Filone, which government entity should pick up the tab for early voting?
Well, I think if the real concern is uniformity, let's have the state fund more access in rural areas. And then we can create uniformity that way. But by vetoing this provision, then you eliminate that possibility. And so actually what the governor's veto does is ensure that the only way to have uniformity is by having limited hours, which is, again, not focusing on the real question. The real question is, do we make it easier for people to vote so they can exercise their sovereign power in our democracy, or do we make it hard for them to vote? It's obvious the governor has made a choice.
Owen Robinson, what about it? Which government entity should pick up the tab for early voting?
I think it's, to Ed's point, if the local governments want to have more open hours and more time, and to date, that's who has been picking up the bill. The city of Milwaukee, when they're open on the weekend, when they're open, you know, in the evenings, they're picking up the bill. They have been to date. That was a measure to try to make the state pay for some of that. But frankly, you know, to Ed's point, if even this only sets the hours that they can be open, not the hours they have to be open. So you're still going to have a lot of communities that will not be open from 8 to 7, Monday through Friday for the 2 weeks before the election because they can't afford it, and they won't. So we're still going to have some non-uniformity, but I think that the local governments, if they make the choice to do it, they need to pick up the bill. And that's up for the local residents to decide if they're willing to pay for it.
Lobbyists can start making campaign donations to candidates for office 7 weeks earlier than previously allowed. Governor Walker signed that bill into law yesterday as well. All Democrats were opposed to the bill. I'm assuming that includes you, Ed.
Well, actually, you know, I've always been very concerned that lobbyists don't have enough influence in our state government. And this is really fixing a problem of longstanding. We need to get more influence to big money corporate lobbyists so that they can have their voices heard. I hope sarcasm works on the radio. I sort of suspect maybe it doesn't.
It's always worked for me.
Yeah. Is there anyone who really thinks that getting big money donors access to candidates earlier is a good thing? And, you know, there's already so much channeling of campaign donations and lobbyist donations to incumbents that takes place. This really just continues the trend of having a government in Madison that dances to the tune of the special interests.
Owen Robinson, what did you think about that bill?
I think it's almost a big nothing burger, just from the standpoint that, to Ed's point, I mean, if lobbyists are and big corporate money or big union money or whatever it is are influencing the way lawmakers vote, which clearly it does, whether it happens 7 weeks earlier or 7 weeks later is really immaterial. I mean, they know if they're going to get that money. They know who they're cozying up to. It doesn't really matter what the date on the check is. So I don't think it really changes anything for the better or worse. But to Ed's point, you know, there's still the issue with money influencing people, and there's really no way around that.
Well, you know, that's the cynicism that I think we have to fight, to say there's nothing we can do. If people can donate some money, then why bother trying to limit, you know, the amounts at all? If people can donate at one time, why try to limit their donations at other times? To just throw up your hands and say it's pointless, that's not the way to solve this. We have to address the issue, and we have to try and limit that influence as best we can.
Well, 806. If you look through the, and I'm sorry, John, if you look through the history of electoral politics for thousands of years, frankly, I mean, big money gets people elected, and it's some, you know, people are influenced by funding from people. So I think we should focus more on transparency and disclosure. So if we have a candidate who's running because one billionaire is supporting them and writing all the checks, so be it. As long as we know it, at least the voters can make a choice. But I think trying to squeeze the money out of politics is you know, charging at windmills. It's a lost cause.
800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to weigh in on any of the bills. There were 29 of them that the governor signed into law. If you'd like to weigh in on those, now would be the time to call. 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And you can also find us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. And remember, the Week in Review quiz, with its incredibly valuable prize, is still to come here on the Ideas Network. One of the bills that the governor signed was a bill to allow attorneys to appeal court rulings blocking state law. The Assembly passed a bill last year that would allow lawyers to nullify rulings that block statutes if they filed an appeal within 10 days. Republicans introduced the bill after judges struck down parts of Governor Walker's collective bargaining restrictions and voided voter photo ID requirements. Owen Robinson, what did you think of this bill?
Well, and here I understand where the Republicans are coming from, and I understand their frustration with how that process works, but it's a bill that I fairly strongly disagree with. I think that it interferes with the judicial process, and I'd rather see, I mean, laws get passed, laws get challenged in court. I'd rather see them work through the normal court process and not be, you know, shortchanged by the action of a single lawyer.
And Ed Falone?
Yeah, and I agree. I think Owen's right on this. We have judicial procedures in place for good reasons. You don't want to have piecemeal appeals where parts of a case are brought up on appeal before the whole rest of the case, and things get delayed and bifurcated, and it's complicated. And I think the strong desire by some Republicans to hamper the ability of judges to issue injunctions, finding certain statutes unconstitutional, which is their job, their strong desire to limit that is causing them to mess around with the normal court procedures that work and work for a reason. And so to allow appeals in the middle of a case, I think, is not wise, and it's going to bog down the system in ways that are not healthy.
Governor Walker signed signed legislation this week that will cut taxes in Wisconsin by $504 million over the next 2 years. For taxpayers, the measure amounts to a $131 reduction on a median-valued home's tax bill this December and saves the average worker $46 in annual income tax. Democrats call this an election year gimmick. What do you think, Ed Falone?
Well, I think everyone has pretty much sort of set out their position on this tax cut bill. This is an administration, the Walker administration, that started out by saying we're in a fiscal crisis and that we had no money, and so we had no choice but to make drastic cuts, including some very severe cuts to public education in the state. And now we find out we have a surplus and we need to give the money back because we don't need the money. And I'm sure in the next election cycle, we're going to have another crisis and it's going to require severe cuts. And so we get into this boom and bust mentality, which is all about winning elections. And it's not about governing the state and its long-term interests. I think we're looking at the next biennial budget, a $700 million structural shortfall. Republican Dale Schultz in the Senate says that the current tax cuts set us up for a very bad time in the future. But, you know, Walker may not be around then, so he probably doesn't really care. It's all about short-term thinking.
And Owen Robinson, what did you think of this tax cut bill?
Well, I'm always a bit amused when I hear liberals complain about cuts to state government because, in fact, Walker's budget actually increased state spending, much to my chagrin. I wish he had cut it more, but he did not. But the fact is that the economy is improving, not as well as all of us would like. We're seeing more tax revenue coming to the state. And so when you get more revenue in the state, you have a couple choices. You can keep it and spend it, you can save it, or you can give it back. And I think the deal with the taxpayers should be exactly that. You give it back because it's money that if you've set a budget, you've set your priorities, you have the money to spend the things that we've decided we're going to spend money on as a state government. If you have extra money, you should give it back to the taxpayers. And this represents, I believe, the third tax cut in the last year that's come out of the Walker administration, which is just such a refreshing change from the days of every election cycle needing to increase taxes because we had this structural deficit and all of that. So, frankly, if there's a boom and bust cycle, it's working pretty well for taxpayers so far, and thank you very much to the Walker administration for that.
And Governor Walker signed an asbestos bill into law that was opposed by many veterans groups. Vets say it will delay and deny justice to those who have gotten sick due to asbestos exposure. Owen Robinson, was this a good bill for Walker to sign?
Well, it's a pretty technical bill about what disclosure as far as if you're suing different people to make sure if you're suing for asbestos related illnesses that you're not getting paid twice. I think when you look at things like this, and there's a couple of these other bills you have to look at as far as who's driving it, who wins, and who's really been pushing for this bill or against this bill has been the trial lawyers, because frankly they make a lot of money off these lawsuits. So I think that, you know, it's probably not great optics for Walker, but I'm glad he stood on his principles and is trying to make sure that the litigation process in Wisconsin is fair to all.
Well, there's a principle in the law that if someone is injured by two parties and they're both responsible and you sue one party, the person that you sue should make you whole for your injury and then let that person go after the other party and try and get contribution from them. Let the wrongdoers fight amongst themselves as to who's going to pay and how much. But let the plaintiff, the person who's been injured, who in this case is someone suffering from
mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma, thank you. The asbestos-related disease. Let the person who's sick get compensated first, and then let the wrongdoers fight amongst themselves as to how, who's going to contribute how much. What this bill does is it actually puts the burden on the plaintiff to go after certain other trusts from companies that produced asbestos to try and get recovery there first, to knock on other doors first. And that's really an unnecessary burden to put on someone. Let the companies that are responsible for the asbestos fight amongst themselves. Don't make the plaintiff go knocking on different doors first. This is someone who's already very sick, that has medical costs. One-third of the plaintiffs, it seems, are veterans because so many of the military are exposed to asbestos or have been in the past. It's really unfair, and I think that's why the trial lawyers are against it is because it goes against this basic principle of law.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, lots more to come, including the latest poll from the Marquette Law School, and we'll also be hearing about Mary Burke's jobs plan and other state political issues from the past week, and we've got some callers who want to join us as well. It's the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. Owen Robinson and Ed Filone are with me. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Week in Review. Each week at this time, we take a look at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. My guests on this edition of the Week in Review, Owen Robinson, columnist for the West Bend Daily News, and Ed Filone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Well, speaking of Marquette University, the Marquette University Law School poll was released on Wednesday, and it shows the race between Republican Governor Scott Walker and Democratic challenger Mary Burke remains close, with Walker holding a 48-41% lead, a plus or minus error of 3.5 percentage points in that poll. And Owen Robinson, what do you make of this poll? What did it tell you?
I think it's nothing terribly surprising. I mean, regardless of how you want to state it, Walker is a polarizing figure. He has high negatives. He also has very high support in number, but he's always floated in that same sort of range. I don't think, regardless of who runs against him, I don't think he'll probably get above, 55% of the vote or so, and probably never go below about 48% of the goal. So it's a matter of getting out those few percentage points in between to win an election. But right now, I don't see much change in anything.
Ed Filone?
Well, we used to see campaign mode where politicians' favorability ratings might be lower, but then if they win the election, they govern in a way that tries to be inclusive, that brings people together behind shared goals, and the favorability ratings would raise. What we're seeing in modern times, certainly in Wisconsin, and I think there's somewhat of a national trend, is that candidates are in campaign mode all the time, which means that they remain polarizing and in sort of divide-and-conquer mode all the time, playing to their base. And what's really interesting about the poll result to me is that in the data, more than half of the voters thought that Walker didn't really care about them. And I think that should be a very troubling sign in the data for the Walker administration, because that plays into a theme of Walker as captured by the special interests, having an administration with policies that favor the special interests. If more than half of the people polled, and that presumably includes some Walker supporters, see him as not being on their side, that could play into some themes for the Burke campaign that could hurt the governor.
Owen Robinson, what about that Governor Walker not seen as empathetic as his challenger Mary Burke?
You know, I think it does play into a theme, but I think it's a slightly different one than Ed portrays, because we saw this in the election for Obama as well, where we saw a majority of voters thought that Obama cared more about them, but also didn't have confidence in his competence. So I think it is something about the electorate nowadays that we value whether somebody at least pretends to care about us, which, I realize I'm a bit cynical, but frankly, I don't care if a politician cares about me. I care if they're competent and if they know how to do their job. And we've gotten to the point where we value empathy over competence, and I think that's a troubling sign in the American electorate.
Also this week, Democratic candidate Mary Burke says that she has a plan to create jobs in Wisconsin. She didn't commit to a specific number, that's well, probably not unusual. Learned a lesson from perhaps the Governor Walker's campaign when he promised 250,000 jobs, a number which now doesn't look like it will be attained. But Ed Filone, what did you think of Mary Burke's jobs plan that was unveiled this week?
Well, I thought it was refreshing in that it's focusing on the right things. Too often in the Walker administration and in the past, you see this sort of crony capitalism chasing after specific companies, trying to encourage them, lure them to our state with tax breaks and subsidies. And really, the Burke plan focuses on laying the foundation for job growth in the future. So her plan talks about investment in education, both public education and also public schools, or higher education and public schools, investment capital for entrepreneurs, and really creating the environment in the state that won't have a quick turnaround. term result, but is absolutely necessary if you're going to create a foundation for the promotion of high-tech jobs that pay good wages. We're not going to get anywhere as a state economy continuing to chase ever-decreasing manufacturing jobs. Really, what we need to do is identify and promote investment in jobs of the future. And that's the sort of long-term thinking that, unfortunately, we don't see too often with politicians because they can't crow about specific successes in their administration. It pays off in the future. So I think it's very refreshing to see Mary Burke, who is, you know, experienced business person, understand that it's all about laying the foundation. And so I like the plan.
Owen Robinson, what was your take on Mary Burke's jobs plan?
Well, I mean, Mary Burke is an experienced business person at outsourcing jobs to China, so I'll just throw that in there. But overall, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in this plan, and frankly, it's a lot of stuff that the Walker administration's already been doing as far as laying that foundation, investing in things. There's also just some, you know, liberal throwaways in there, like investing in high-speed rail and stuff like that, where when you say investing, that normally means spending money. So that, you know, we basically want to throw money at some interest groups from the left side, but there's some good stuff in there too. I mean, frankly, as I read through her plan and I watched the video, most of it's, you know, kind of content free. It's okay, we're going to create an environment, we're going to try to be more friendly to business. Well, great, we're already doing that. What are you going to do specifically? And that's where I think that, to your point, John, I think she's being very careful not to give specifics because she doesn't want to be tied to a number, to be tied to a commitment. And while Walker will fall short on his $250,000 or 250,000 jobs goal, at least he was willing to put out a number and strive for it. And so I think Burke has a ways to go.
And by the way,
if I could just say, you know, this sort of casting the idea of high-speed rail as a liberal idea, you know, Tom Still and many of the high-tech businesses in the state have been pushing for an IQ corridor for a long time between Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago. We have an economic model. If you look at the Research Triangle in North Carolina and how successful that has been for that state's economy, you look at the research area on the I-90 corridor outside Boston. There are various areas around the country that have been able to parlay and leverage academic institutions in partnership with emerging technology companies into a real economic driver. And this is not a liberal fairy tale. This is something that works. And, you know, I don't understand why this is being somehow cast off as a liberal idea. This is something where business and people all around the state can get behind this. And so, you know, it's not part of it.
And I think you're absolutely right, Ed. That is a proven model that works, and I think it is something that we should be working on. I think where I throw in high-speed rail is the fact that I can get from Milwaukee to Madison in a car in 70 minutes or in a train in 50 makes very little difference in economic development after investing $1 billion in that train track. So I think that's where it's where you focus that money, where you focus that development to make sure we're building those connections between the universities and the research and the high-tech companies and all those great things that we'd love to have. We'd love to have a research triangle like they have in Carolina, but, you know, we don't have it now.
By the way, at 7:30 on Monday morning during the State Capitol Report, Joy Cardine will be talking with an economist who will take a look at the competing Walker and Burke jobs plans. And we're also working on trying to get a state senator to join us in the first half hour to preview the final day on the Senate's calendar for this year. On the economy, can Wisconsin become a top 10 economy, as Mary Burke says she wants to do? And we'll start with you, Owen Robinson.
I think we can. I think we have a great workforce. We have great people. We have relatively low unemployment right now. We have decent infrastructure. We have some work to do there. We have a port. I mean, we have all the tools we need to build a great economy. So I see no excuse why Wisconsin can't be in the top 10.
Ed Filone?
Well, I think if you're going to have a great economy, you have to recognize that the economic drivers in the state are the urban areas. We're not going to have a top 10 economy relying on job growth in the northwestern corner of the state. It's going to be driven by the urban areas, Milwaukee and Madison, and the communities south of Milwaukee towards Chicago. And so we've got to stop this process that's taking place in the state legislature. of turning it into a rural versus urban debate and trying to limit support for urban areas, trying to turn the urban areas into sort of a, you know, fend for yourself, you're on your own situation. We've got to end that because there's no way we're going to be a top 10 economy unless our urban areas lead the way for economic growth.
Owen Robinson?
And I don't disagree with that at all. I think that the clash between rural and urban is, you know, it's historic. It's happened forever. The fact is that when you have legislators that come from different parts of the state, they're there to represent their parts of the state. But I think we also can't discount the fact that we see a lot of growth in the Fox Valley, you know, certainly a more urban area, but we're seeing tremendous growth there. We're seeing things like, you know, frankly, the mine that we want to build up in northern Wisconsin, and plane manufacturing happening up in northern Wisconsin. I mean, I think there's also a tremendous lot of opportunity in western Wisconsin right there up against Minnesota, because there's a lot that's spilling over there, and with Minnesota's policies driving a lot of the workers over to our border are great things. So I don't disagree with that at all. I think that, you know, if we're seeing true economic development, a lot of that's going to be driven out of our urban areas, and that's where we need to spend a lot of attention and make sure that it's creating an environment where businesses can be there. But I don't think that means just discounting the concerns of the rest of Wisconsin.
Back to the Marquette poll for just a second. 63% in Wisconsin say we should raise the minimum wage. Ed Filone, what did you think about that?
Well, the raising the minimum wage is usually politically popular. And it plays well. It's a concrete action that legislators can take that people see some benefit from immediately, and so legislators love doing that. I've always been, you know, a bit agnostic on raising the minimum wage. It does help a small group of workers concentrated in a few hourly wage jobs, so it doesn't hurt anything, and the economic evidence shows it does not retard or diminish job growth, but it doesn't particularly help that much. What you really need to do is prepare workers for new jobs in the new economy, and so investment in worker training and education, for example, investment in technical colleges, much more important, I think. But it certainly wouldn't hurt anything, and I'm not surprised, as everyone who you know has suffered for years with very little raise income, you know, they know expenses keep going up. It's harder and harder to keep afloat. So it certainly doesn't hurt anything, and it would be a popular thing.
Owen Robinson, should Wisconsin raise the minimum wage or keep it where it is?
Well, I think Ed's pretty close on that. I think the economics show that it hurts some, but it's not a lot. You know, it's very popular with politicians because it is something they can put their name on and say, hey, I raised wages, but it doesn't affect a lot of people. And frankly, I think we should be focused on, you know, raising the economy and raising the bar and, you know, making sure that there's an environment where Wisconsins can make a heck of a lot more than a minimum wage and be in positions where they can advance their careers and not working at that wage. So I think it's a politically hot issue, but for the real economy and real people, I think it's misspent effort.
And the poll also shows that 50% of voters say the state should decide on the wage, not local officials. Owen, do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I do think if we are going to raise the minimum wage, it needs to be, you know, going back to our uniformity argument earlier, more uniform across the state, because it just becomes, if you're an employer who has, you know, half a dozen offices across the state, to have different wage scales for depending on where the zip code is, it's a nightmare to manage. And so I think if it is something that we're going to do, it needs to be done at the state level.
And you, Ed?
I once again, the uniformity argument is a complete red herring. We have national companies that pay workers all over the country with different minimum wages all over the place. It's you've got an HR department. It's not hard to manage that. You know, this is simply another question of let's give the urban areas in our state the tools they need to be successful. And when you put all the control in the hands of the state, and as Owen, you know, rightly pointed out, most of the legislators in Madison represent rural areas. When they have all the power and they centralize all the control, you're not giving the urban communities the tools they need to respond to situations in their counties. And I think that that's a huge mistake. Local control for years has been the mantra of the Republican Party, with good reason. They had the right end of that argument. And, you know, the more they retreat from local control, I think the more unfortunate it is.
One of the other bills that is being dealt with, in fact, the state Senate still needs to act on it. The Wisconsin State Senate plans to vote next week on a bill designed to make chemotherapy drugs that can be taken at home in pill form more affordable. And a spokeswoman for Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said Monday that based on the broad bipartisan support the bill received last Friday in the Assembly, it'll be up for a vote without further changes on April 1st. That's the Senate's last day in session for the year. Ed Filone, what about this bill, and what do you think about the way this came down?
Well, I think this just plays into, I think, one of the themes of all the topics, which has been in this legislative session, the influence of the special interest lobbyists. Insurance companies don't want to pay for oral chemo medication because, they just don't want to pay. And even though it's very popular and legislators, at least publicly, want to be on the right side of this issue and providing insurance coverage for an equivalent medication that gets prescribed to people, why should we force people into one particular kind of chemotherapy just because the insurance company prefers it if their doctor is prescribing another method that seems best for them? So behind the scenes, a lot of maneuvering, behind the scenes, a lot of lobbying, and Scott Fitzgerald using some procedural mechanisms to drag his feet on this, maybe to provide, you know, allow members of the legislature to publicly support it, but knowing that it won't ultimately pass. We'll see what happens. You know, for me, the broader concern is that even if it does pass, for certain medical conditions like cancer, which affect so many families, families, unfortunately, have been touched by cancer, you can get a groundswell of public pressure that might overcome the special interest group. But for so many other medical conditions that aren't as common or people don't know about as much, you're not going to have that kind of public outcry. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, and it just demonstrates how difficult it can be to get insurance coverage for medical conditions even today.
Owen Robinson?
Well, I think I think Ed touched on the right topic there. This is a special interest bill. This is something that was being pushed heavily, and it creates great optics in the political realm because you are talking about cancer patients, and there are, you know, obviously very, you know, troubling stories there. But, you know, we're talking about insurance companies. Some of them cover these drugs, some of them don't. So you always have to go back to who benefits if this bill passes. Who benefits are the drug companies who manufacture those drugs, who manufacture those pills, and they want insurance companies to cover them so that they can sell them so they can make money. So, I mean, it is a special interest bill, but it's being driven by you know, insurance companies. Like I said, some of them cover it, some of them don't, but it's being driven by the drug companies who really want this bill. And frankly, they won. I think they created an environment and created that groundswell that embarrassed Republicans who should have stood on principle in that government should not be dictating what insurance companies should or should not cover. That's the fault of Obamacare. That's the flaw in that law, dictating who, you know, what companies should cover what and how much they should cover. And they fell into the trap, and they're going to pass it, and it's going to be there.
Again, we're trying to line up a state senator to talk about the chemo bill and other things on the Senate agenda on Monday at 7 during the state capitol report. So tune in on Monday and find out if we were successful or not. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some national issues. President Obama meets the Pope, and you can get an extension in the sign-up for health insurance if you're already in the system. There's also a new president at Marquette University, and we'll have our Week in Review quiz. That's all still to come. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We take a look at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. Owen Robinson and Ed Filone are with me. You can be too at 800-642-1234. Okay, this is what you've been waiting for the entire hour. It's time for our Week in Review quiz. Here it is. Pay attention. It was reported this week that scientists discovered a possible dwarf planet way, way, way. Yes, that's three ways. That means it's really far out there in space. After which U.S. politician did the team name the object? A dwarf planet discovered way out in space. Not just way out in space, but way, way, way out in space. After which U.S. politician did the team name the object? You can call us at 800-642-1234. You've got about 5 minutes to call us with your answer, and then we'll pick a random winner from all of the correct answers. That winner will receive a very valuable piece of WPR merchandise. And we'll reveal the answer and the winner at the end of the program. All right. Let's see. Well, the President Obama met with Pope Francis this week. He says he was incredibly moved by Pope Francis' insights on world problems during their long-anticipated first meeting. Responsibility for the care of the poor was talked about. That's been a theme of Pope Francis since he became the Pope. There was probably still some differences of opinion on things like birth control. Owen Robinson, let's go with you first. What did you think of President Obama's meeting with the Pope?
It was fine. I mean, the Pope is against abortion. Obviously, Obama heard some of that against the mandate in Obama about, or in Obamacare, about supporting, birth control that does that, and we're supporting abortion in that. It was a great event for our president to meet with another foreign leader and talk about the issues of the world. I think it was mainly manufactured for, looking good, and I don't think much is going to come out of it.
Ed Filone.
First of all, let me just say, birth control is not abortion, so I don't want any misapprehension there, and Obamacare does not require abortion coverage. I think that the meeting between the president and the Pope should just cause us all to pause and reflect for a moment. I think there's a tendency in the media, and even among politicians, to view Catholics as a monolithic group, and they're not. They share different moral perspectives. They share different political affiliations. President Obama has always done well with Catholic voters in the United States. He got over 50%, or maybe I think about 50% of the Catholic vote in 2012. He had an even higher percentage his first election. Catholics are not monolithic. They don't all think alike, and they don't all value different moral issues equally. So it's important not to view them as a monolithic group and not to view the church as necessarily opposed to President Obama's policies. There are plenty of Catholics, as the voting tallies show, who support President Obama's policies.
And speaking of Catholics, Marquette University has named UW-Milwaukee Chancellor Michael Lovell as its new president. He'll be the first layman to lead the 133-year-old Jesuit university. And Ed Filone, what did you think about the naming of the new president for Marquette?
Well, I have a new boss, so obviously I'm going to say that he's brilliant, a great hire. I just hope they pay him enough for what he's worth. I think he's a good choice for the university. I think, in particular, his local ties will help a great deal. He's got strong connections to the business community in Milwaukee, and Marquette obviously can only benefit from continuing to develop partnerships with the business community in the education of our students. I think the fact that he knows the local political landscape, is familiar with it, will help a great deal as well with the transition period. So he can hit the ground running as opposed to having someone come in from another state who has to take a while and have a learning curve. So I think it's a good hire. He's very well liked, and now we can get on to the important business of hiring a basketball coach.
Owen Robinson, you're not too far away from Milwaukee. What did you make of the Lovell hire?
No, and obviously Ed is a lot closer to this than I am. I think it was an interesting choice, being the first non-Jesuit to run the university. I think that he has a good history, like Ed said, the good local ties. I think that's all important. I think it'll be interesting to see what vision he lays out for Marquette and where we go from here. And to Ed's point, what, you know, now we need a basketball coach, so where do we go there?
And where does that leave UW-Milwaukee, you think?
I think it leaves them, searching for somebody to run the place. But what I'm hoping is, I mean, UWM is a great university, and it's really been trying to set themselves up as a peer to UW-Madison. They have the student body, they have the campus, they have all of that. I think that I would hope that they reach out for somebody visionary to come in and really drive that university to be the research university that they want to be, and to be a real marquee within Wisconsin. And going back to our earlier conversation, I mean, we have Marquette, we have UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee. I mean, we have some great universities in this state. I think we should capitalize on that and hopefully help that build the state.
Well, as someone who teaches at a private university, you know, there are obvious advantages to being at a private university and not being subjected to the micromanagement of the state legislature. And I'd have no information as to whether that played into Mr. Lovell's decision, but I know when I made the decision to go into academia, I definitely preferred a private university over public simply because of the independence and the freedom you have. And I think that members of the state legislature in their dealings with the UW system need to be conscious of going too far and driving away really qualified people if they demonize the system for political purposes.
The Obama administration is going to grant extra time to Americans who say they are unable to complete their enrollment in health care plans through the federal insurance marketplace by the March 31st deadline. All consumers who have begun to apply for coverage on healthcare.gov, but who do not finish by Monday, will now have until about mid-April to ask for an extension. Republicans question the move, with House Speaker John Boehner calling it a joke. Owen, what did you make of this?
I think we are clearly in an extra constitutional phase right now of Obamacare. Frankly, if I read the law, it doesn't match what is actually happening now. And even what you just said, that they're going to extend the deadline to about sometime in April, I mean, does anybody know what this law actually is? And when did we get to the point where we don't actually have laws that go through Congress and get passed and get signed, but we have a president in a speech declaring that, you know, we're going to extend deadlines, do something? And this is, you know, 20 or 30 something changes to the law. So I think it's, you know, I think that he has warped the law so much from its original build at this point that nobody knows what it is and nobody knows what it's going to be. And so I think a lot of these things are going to show up in court, and a lot of things, if you're trying to enforce a deadline, for instance, if somebody gets a fine because they didn't register in time, you know, what are you going to do? Go back and look at Obama's speech and say, well, he said I could? I mean, so I think it's a very dangerous time in America, in that we have an executive who is literally changing the law on a whim, and nobody knows what it really is.
Ed Falone?
Well, I'd start with Owen's process of asking, well, who wins in this situation? And I think the people who win are the people who are able to get health insurance. I don't think the purpose of the Affordable Care Act was to have a particular date certain while everyone needs to get health insurance. I think the purpose of the Affordable Care Act was to expand coverage, and so keep the eye on that ball. I can't remember a time in United States history where a congressional statute was passed and then members of Congress spent a substantial amount of time trying to undermine the statute and put obstacles to its implementation in place. Maybe Reconstruction after the Civil War. So this is uncharted territory. The sort of normal executive branch enforcement of the law has been blocked in many instances by recalcitrant members of Congress. And I think the president is struggling how to enforce a law when Congress doesn't want you to. And that's certainly not the normal procedure. Normally, Congress passes a law and they want the president to enforce it. So we are a bit in uncharted waters here. I think the president is committed to implementing the law, and he's going to use some very creative methods to do so. And whether or not exceeding its constitutional authority is something that is going to ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court.
When I would challenge any listeners here to define what the law is now, because I don't know, and I don't think you know, Ed, and I don't think you know, John. What is the law?
Well, that's probably the subject for an entire hour of programming, and I'm sure we'll have it on the Ideas Network. Back to state government for just a moment. Former GOP Majority Leader Bill Cramer submitted paperwork this week to say he is not going to seek re-election. He was ousted from his post earlier this month amid allegations he sexually harassed two women. That brings the total number of incumbents not seeking re-election this fall in the Assembly to 13. Ed Falone, how do you read this many people not seeking another term?
Well, I was talking to a member of the legislature not long ago, and he was decrying the fact that there's so little experience in the Assembly and even in the Senate. People with very short tenures. And with experience comes a great deal of wisdom. You learn you're not always on the right side of an issue. You learn from your mistakes. You learn that you don't have a monopoly on power, that other constitutional officers and elected officials have their own power. And you learn to make allies and not enemies. And so experience is a good thing in our legislature. And so the lack of experience, I think, is very troubling.
And Owen Robinson?
Well, and I would disagree to an extent there. I think experience is important. There needs to be some of that. But I think it's also important to have fresh blood in the legislature. And it goes back to our concept of a citizen legislature, people who take time out of their jobs for a few years to go out and represent the citizens and go there and then go home. I think that's important. I think that we're seeing, I think largely because there's a solid majority there, that there's a lot of people who are just, they're ready to move on. Frankly, my representative is doing the same thing. She wants to go and do something else with her life. And I think that's great. And we get fresh blood in there, fresh perspectives, new things there. Specifically to Bill Cramer, I think that if the allegations are true, that he should resign his post and he should go home.
And to crank up the Walker presidential ambitions machine one more time, he's going to be in Vegas this weekend for a meeting that's attracting a bunch of GOP presidential hopefuls. I got to ask, Owen Robinson, do you think that Walker is going to jump in the race for 2016?
It sure looks like he's going to, and I think all the indications are so. I think it'll be a tough slug for him, frankly, but we'll see. It'd be great to have a Wisconsinite in the White House. We'll see.
And Ed Falone, very quickly.
Well, I've always said that I think Wisconsin can only really support one presidential candidate, and I think Paul Ryan has all the advantages, experience on the national stage, a little more gravitas over Walker, and so I expect if there is a Wisconsin candidate, it would be Ryan.
Okay, it's time to reveal the answer to our Week in Review quiz. Congratulations to Diane in La Crosse. Our question, we ask, after which U.S. politician is a recently discovered possible dwarf planet named? The answer, we should have a bell to run here. The answer is Joe Biden. The official name of the object is actually 2012 VP-113, which is simply the result of the team's intricate classification system, and we're told has nothing to do with an affinity for the vice president. The lead discoverer said they saw the VP in there and just decided to call it Biden for short. Okay, there you have it. It's our Week in Review. Thanks very, very much to Owen Robinson and Ed Falone for being with me this hour. Really appreciate it, your discussion.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Ed. Good to talk to you.
Good. Same here, Owen.
Owen Robinson is a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Ed Falone is Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Bill Martin's produced this program, on-air production handled by Christy Taylor, and Bill Martin's also acted as my director. Thanks for all the help I got from Robin and Bill and Christy this week. Joy Cardine will be back in her usual spot bright and early on Monday morning. Be sure to tune in. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.